Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're going to chant together verse 20. There's a whole series of verses that have no purport before this. Canto 9, chapter 5.
Pritosmyanugrahitosimi Tava Bhagavatasyavai Darshana Sparshana Lapayar Ati Tienatma Medhasa Pritosmyanugrahitosmi Tava Bhagavatasyavai Darshana Sparshana Lapayar Ati Tien Dhyatma Medhasa. Tava Your Bhagavatasya, because of your being a pure devotee. Vai, indeed, darshana, by seeing you. Sparshana, and touching your feet. Alapai, by talking with you. Atityena, by your hospitality. Atma Mesa, by my own intelligence. So before I read the translation, I'm going back to the previous verses that have no purport, starting with text 8. So text 8 is Maharaj Ambarish speaking or offering prayers to Sudarshan. O indefatigable one, when you are sent by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to enter among the soldiers of the Daityas and Danavas, you stay on the battlefield and unendingly separate their arms, bellies, thighs, legs, and heads. O protector of the universe, text 9, you are engaged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead as his all-powerful weapon in killing the envious enemies for the benefit of our entire dynasty. Kindly favor this poor brahmana. This will certainly be a favor for all of us. Text 9. If our family has given charity to the proper persons, if we have performed ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices, if we have properly carried out our occupational duties, and if we have been guided by learned brahmanas, I wish in exchange that this brahmana be freed from the burning caused by the Sudarshan Chakra. Last of his prayers, text 11. If the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is one without a second, who is the reservoir of all transcendental qualities, and who is the life and soul of all living entities, is pleased with us, we wish that this brahmana, Durvasa Muni, be freed from the pain of being burned. Text 12. Shukadeva Goswami continued, When the king offered prayers to the Sudarshan Chakra and Lord Vishnu, because of his prayers, the Sudarshan Chakra became peaceful and stopped burning the Brahmana, known as Durvasa Muni, text 13. Durvasa Muni, the greatly powerful mystic, was indeed satisfied when freed from the fire of the Sudarshan Chakra. He thus praised the qualities of Maharaj Ambarish and offered him the highest benedictions. And then comes his benedictions. Text 14. Durvasa Muni said, My dear king, today I have experienced the greatness of devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for although I have committed an offense, you have prayed for my good fortune. For those who have achieved the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of the Pure Devotees, what is impossible to do and what is impossible to give up? Then comes an important verse, text 16. What is impossible for the servants of the Lord by the very hearing of his holy name when is purified? Text 17. O King, overlooking my offenses, you have saved my life. Thus, I am very much obliged to you because you are so merciful. Expecting the return of Durvasa Muni, the king had not taken his food. He fasted for a whole year. That's a long time to fast. Therefore, when the sage returned, the king fell at his lotus feet, pleasing him in all respects, and fed him, Durvasa Muni, sumptuously. Text 19. Thus the king respectfully received Durvasa Muni, who, after eating various varieties of palatable food, was so satisfied that with great affection he requested the king to also eat, saying, Please take your meal. And then this verse that's on the board. Durvasa Muni said, I am very pleased with you, my dear king. At first I thought of you as an ordinary human being and accepted your hospitality. But later I could understand by my own intelligence that you are the most exalted devotee of the Lord. Therefore, simply by seeing you, touching your feet, and talking with you, I have been pleased and have become obliged to you. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is said, Vaishnavera kriya mudra vigyeha na bujhaya. : Even a very intelligent man cannot understand the activities of a pure Vaishnava. Therefore, because Durvasa Muni was a great mystic yogi, he first mistook Maharaj Ambarish for an ordinary human being and wanted to punish him, such as the mistaken observation of a Vaishnava when Durvasa Muni was persecuted by the Sudarshana Chakra. However, his intelligence developed. Therefore, the word Atma Medhasa is used to indicate that by his personal experience, he would understand how great a Vaishnava the king was. When Durvasa Muni was chased by the Sudarshana Chakra, he wanted to take shelter of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, and he was even able to go to the spiritual world, meet the personality of Godhead, and talk with him face to face. Yet, he was unable to be rescued from the attack of Sudarshana Chakra. Thus, he could understand the influence of a Vaishnava by personal experience. Durvasa Muni was certainly a great yogi and a very learned brahmana. But despite his being a real yogi, he was unable to understand the influence of a Vaishnava. Therefore, it is said for the second time in the purport, Vaishnavera kriya mudra vigyeha na bujhaya. Even the most learned person cannot understand the value of a Vaishnava. There is always a possibility for so-called jnanis and yogis to be mistaken when studying the character of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava can be understood by how much he is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in terms of his inconceivable activities. So how are you all doing in the inconceivable activities department? So the favor of Krishna goes to everybody. So one of the inconceivable activities for, at least for Western, for people in general in Kali Yuga, is to be able to adhere to the bhakti process properly. On the one hand and on the other hand, on the one hand, not uncommon was Prabhupada being asked by people, reporters and other people in general, can you show some miracle, or do you have mystic power? And Prabhupada would point to his Western boys and girls who previously were addicted to sinful activities, and now, even if bribed, if enticed, if offered the opportunity to indulge, will say no. In favor of simply wanting to serve Krishna. So that's a power of our founder Acharya. And then there's the power of the person who inconceivably says no. It's both. The empowerment comes from Krishna, and Krishna then empowers the Acharya, and the Acharya then empowers the person who says yes. And it's just that act of saying yes and abiding by the yes, not just saying yes and doing something else, or intermittently doing not doing, doing not doing, doing not doing, but consistently just abiding, taking shelter in the instructions. There's inconceivable power. It's stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, for example, that even to induce another person to chant Krishna's name, it requires Krishna Shakti. We can't do that. It's not, so in other words, it's not our activity that achieves spreading Krishna consciousness. That's a misconception. Certainly we have activity, the activity of devotion, and the empowerment being the instrument of the will of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the disciplic succession from him, then comes empowerment, and it's the deliverance is the Supreme Lord, and we simply become the instrument. So that's an empowerment to induce. The false ego conception is we're going to do it. We'll go out and save the fallen souls. That used to be a language of in the early days. Kind of a missionary spirit, false ego notion. Save the fallen souls. The deliverer is the personality of Godhead, and one may be the agent of the personality of Godhead, and then that's an inconceivable task. As a great Acharya, Prabhupada understood that. I mean, so many places where he indicated, I'm not capable. To say, I'm not capable, it's not false humility, and it's not lots of things that it's not. It's not just a platitude, and really he was thinking, I can do it. He was just saying, I'm incapable. Yet he would then say different things, but somehow I should try. And the try is just to be the instrument, or my dear Lord Krishna, if you so desire, please make my words suited for others to understand, when otherwise it's mission impossible. How can people who are deep in the mode of ignorance and passion understand the message of transcendence? Just yesterday, as a for example, at the Rath Yatra festival in Bloomington, before the parade began, there was kirtan and the deities are on the cart, and while the ropes are still on the ground and so forth. It was very nice. Donna Kelly was asked to speak, and very slowly, because there were new people there that, I mean, it was 99.9% non-resident Indians that grew up knowing Krishna, but not knowing Krishna. Anyway, so she spoke very clearly that what we're doing, the inner meaning of what we're doing. And she explained, exactly as is found in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the event, and it's also in Bhagavatam, the event of Krishna leaving Dwarka, going to Kurukshetra on the occasion of solar eclipse, and the residents in Vrindavan going to Kurukshetra, seeing Krishna, but not wanting to see Krishna in the opulent mood of Dwarka, wishing him to come back with them to Vrindavan. So Rath Yatra means, Krishna, please come back to Vrindavan in the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So she spoke like that, and at the end of the parade there was some stage activity, and I explained that the very same message was the message that Prabhupada gave the very first Rath Yatra in New York. And this audience yesterday was non-resident Indians, and the audience in New York was very few, in that era, very few Indian families, mainly just raw, steeped in ignorance and passion Western people. And he told the whole story, in brief, what the Rath Yatra means. Now, who could understand that message? But I've heard recordings of it since, and it's very clear Prabhupada is giving to the audience this very high message. Why? How is that relatable to the audience? They're not going to understand the message, but he wanted to give that gift of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and so he did, along with the festival, the Rath Yatra festival, at least the sound vibration of the understanding of what we're doing, the goal of Krishna Bhakti, the goal of the Hare Krishna movement.
for some reason, he was inspired to speak that, and he, in pure sound vibration, did so. So the understanding of that message may take a while, even for us presently, following the bhakti process. What does it mean? And enter into the mood of what it means is a whole other thing, besides the cognitive, the affective element, the devotional element. It's in one sense, it's raga bhakti. It's our, but that's our, even our sadhana is, needs us, our sadhana, the sadhana of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Rupa Goswami, lead us to that. It's, that's our process. And by some good fortune, we have that process. By the mercy of our founder Acharya and the previous Acharyas and the mercy of Mahaprabhu. So, back to the purport, a Vaishnava can be understood by the how much he is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in terms of his inconceivable activities. Just another anecdotal example of that. It struck me, because I've spoken about it many, many times. There's a professor, professor of Indian philosophy or something or other from central Pennsylvania, and he was interviewed in the biography of Srila Prabhupada, one of Yodobar's early films, and he describes his meeting of devotees, because the devotees at that time were actively reaching out to the academic community, in part for selling sets of books to them and for their personal use or for the library at the school or whatever. So library party was all over the world, but started in the US and Canada, going to meet those persons. And one of them particularly was impressed with the level of confidence that the devotees had that they could do the impossible. And the specific reference he makes is one devotee, it was Satsrup Maharaj, he didn't give his name, but one devotee was told or requested, given the service by Srila Prabhupada, to start Back to Godhead magazine. And he asked this devotee, do you know anything about magazine publication other than you've read one or a few? And he knew nothing, but he has complete confidence that he could carry it out. So the professor said, I was wondering, how did he get this confidence? And then he made a trip to New York and he met Prabhupada, and then he could understand. That's how he got the confidence. So the empowerment of the founder Acharya marks Krishna Shakti, how he was empowered by Krishna. And that empowerment was transferred to those who are faithful to, just with faith, accept. Faith is a really important, it's an essential element. Humility is essential, and faith is also essential. Otherwise, in the doership mentality, how can we do? How can we carry forward this transcendental mission when in whatever the aspect is that you want to look at? Maintain the temple. The water main bursts. And, you know, any other aspect you want to think of, maintain deity worship in a proper standard. Whatever you, you know, book distribution, Krishna lunch, and, you know, whatever, just become a brahmachari. You know, mission impossible. any one of these. How are we going to do with these things in a proper way? Go back to the Prabhupada's example. I don't know how it is possible. But if Krishna desires, then it's possible. That's that Krishna Shakti. The empowerment of extraordinary activities. And anything that touches the realm of transcendence is beyond our capacity. We're disqualified. Not only unqualified, disqualified. We have abundance of disqualification. No qualification. But by descending mercy, then it becomes possible. So faith in that descending mercy and humility to leave aside the false ego of I'm going to do it and just stay in the mood of I'm depending upon empowerment to carry out publishing Back to Godhead magazine or distributing books or whatever. Whatever. That's what has carried the Hare Krishna movement into the ISKCON 50 realm and same principle into the ISKCON 100 realm. And it's in your hands, devotees, to carry ISKCON into that realm. And there's the elements are there, right in the pages of Bhagavatam. So now, twice in the purport, Prabhupada has quoted a verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Vaishnavera Priyamudra. Vigeha na bujhaya. So I looked it up, and the verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita is a little different. It doesn't begin Vaishnavera, for your reference for later. Text 39, chapter 23, Madhya Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions to Sanatana Goswami. And the transition verse is, Mahaprabhu has explained Bhava Bhakti, and he's now announcing he's going to explain Prema Bhakti. And this verse is connected with Prema Bhakti. Yanra Chite Krishna Prema Karaye Udai Tanra Vakya Kriya Mudra Vigyeha Na Bhujaya. So, consistently, when Prabhupada referred to this verse, it was Vaishnavera, not Krishna Prema. Vaishnavera, Kriya Mudra. So, Kriya means activity, and Mudra means symptoms. Tanra Vakya, that's how it begins. Tanra Vakya, his words, Vakya, Kriya, his activities, Mudra, his qualities, or symptoms, characteristics, they're not understood. Vigeha, even a learned scholar, Vigeha, V means very, very learned person, Na Bhujaya, they can't understand the words, the activities, and the qualities or symptoms. Even the most learned person. There's so many examples. Here's a few. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya couldn't recognize Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Although he saw the symptoms, he tested the symptoms, he understood. When Mahaprabhu was in trance after entering into Jagannath temple and brought him to his home and tested him to see, was he faking or was he in trance? And he understood he was in trance. Because there was no movement of air. Well, very slight movement of air from his nostrils. But his life airs were suspended. It was trance. Wasn't an ordinary person. So Gopinath Bhattacharya, his brother-in-law, chastised Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Even you see the symptoms. Even he's before you. He's in your home and you can't recognize him. You know the symptoms, but you can't see the symptoms. You're so scholarly, but you're a fool. When Jad Bharat was being spoken harshly by Maharaj Rahugana, he didn't understand him. Haridas Thakur, again, you know, multiple times, persons couldn't understand him. Because they're in the bodily conception. They're envious. They're proud. They're covered. Even learned persons. Hiranyakashipu. He was a learned person. Ravana was a learned person, but covered by lust, and Hiranyakashipu covered by pride and anger. And so they can see, but they can't see. So here it's Durvasa Muni. And Durvasa Muni could see, but he couldn't see. Greatly learned, great yogi, couldn't see. And then he could see. So the Atma Medha Sa, his intelligence awakened. But, you know, it was circumstantial. His intelligence awakened because his life was at risk. And if it weren't for the greatness of the quality, mudra, his symptoms or his qualifications of Maharaj Ambarish, he was finished. Certainly in lots of pain, the heat and the fire and the burning and his death, Sudarshan. Few other things, Prabhupada would often say, a person, as soon as a person speaks, then you can understand something. Externally, you cannot necessarily understand. Another example of this Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra reference is Prahlad Maharaj. After Prahlad Maharaj became king, he was moving about in the forest, looking for saintly persons wishing to understand and appreciate the qualifications of the saintly persons. And he found one. The one that he found, referenced in 7th canto, was a sadhu who was in this avaduta stage, something similar to what Rishabhdev had done, just lying in a path covered with mud. And, you know, looks like a crazy person, a mad person. But Prahlad, being a Vaishnava of great quality, could understand, and so he worshipped this prostrated sadhu lying on the ground and placed his head on his feet and then began asking him questions for the sadhu to enlighten him. So because, you know, the saying, it takes one to know one, because Prahlad was an exalted Vaishnava, he could understand, but other persons, how could they understand? Jad Bharat wasn't understood, not only by King Rahugana, he wasn't understood by anybody. But when he spoke, then Rahugana could understand. And to be, similarly, to be able to speak
transcendental knowledge, that's extraordinary. It's not based on scholarship. It's based on descending mercy coming into the life of someone, any one of us, to be able to speak, and to be able to speak where it's effective is dependent upon the purity that has been achieved by the hearing process, which has everything to do with the faith with which we engage in the hearing process. The eagerness to go beyond our limitation by the agency of descending mercy. The whole bhakti process is dependent on these things. And then we can speak transcendental knowledge. Even a child. And it's totally different than a child that's simply, you know, cute and says something and everybody listens because it comes from a child. My point is, it's descending mercy, and the eagerness to receive descending mercy makes one exceptionally qualified, not otherwise. The bhakti principle. So Vaishnavera is fitting. It's the reference in Chaitanya Charitamrita is in connection with Prema Bhakti. But even prior to Prema Bhakti, extraordinary activity can be manifest. One can be empowered to go beyond material conditioning. That's extraordinary. It's the bhakti principle that carries one beyond. We can do things. We should do things that help us go beyond our limitations. We all have them. We have our strengths and we have our weaknesses. We have our qualities and we have our faults. It's just the nature of the place. That's what's going on. And we can do things to help improve in this area, that area. But it's incomplete. It's going to return back to the prior position without the bhakti principle. So the bhakti principle is by good fortune part of our lives. And that's where our attention should go as we're cultivating our life in Krishna consciousness. Our life, say it the other way, our life in Krishna consciousness is dependent upon what we do today. And how we do what we do today is going to determine our Krishna consciousness. As we move towards the final tick of the clock and we leave this world, where is our consciousness? It's not just what we've done, it's the devotion with which we carry out our activity. And last point, there's many, many verses in the Bhagavatam here. It's Shukadeva Goswami speaking this one, specific to the power of the holy name. So the reference, it's two verses combined. Durvasa Muni is speaking, and he's speaking the glories of Maharaj Ambarish. And he's saying, you know, the amazing quality that you have is, although I made an offense, and it wasn't just an offense, it was attempted murder. Big offense. Attempted murder of a king. Attempted murder. Although I committed an offense, not only you forgave me, but you appealed for my welfare. And then so, text 15, for those who have achieved the Supreme Personality Godhead, the master of the pure devotees, what is impossible to do and what is impossible to give up? And then this next one, text 16, what is impossible for the servants of the Lord by the very hearing of his holy name when becomes purified? Aha. Again and again and again in the Bhagavatam, this emphasis on the holy name. as the means of purification. No. There's a qualitative consideration of the chanting of the Holy Name, and our festival of the Holy Name is certainly going to be exploring that. That's part of, a major part of the theme for this coming festival of the Holy Name. At the same time, qualitatively or not, purification takes place. Just like this nice tree that's sitting in our temple room. The tree is not striving for purification. The tree is just passively exposed to the sound vibration of kirtan and japa and glorification of the Lord Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's just passive. Purification is, who knows what next lifetime of the soul that's inhabiting that tree is going to be. Who can say? Or again, something that I came across recently. In the biography of Madhvacharya's life, there's a little passage where he was giving some teachings, great Acharya, and in the audience were his sannyas disciples, and it was stretching over some number of days, and at the end of the teaching, prideful fashion, the sannyasis ask Madhvacharya, which one of us would you like to make commentary on the teachings you've just given us? And noting the pride of the disciples, he pointed the bull over there. He will write commentary. And his comment was that he was listening so attentively that he stopped chewing. His ears were perked and he stopped chewing. Meaning, you know, cows and bulls, they're, it's just part of the thing they do all the time. They're chewing their cud. They're just, but he stopped. Said in his next life, he'll write commentary because he's heard with rapt attention. So controlling the mind. Controlling the mind. To bring the mind to the sound vibration of the name. So even if there isn't control, control of the mind, even your mind is distracted, there's purification. Then there's a qualitative attentiveness factor. And the attentiveness factor is made successful by bhakti, not just by mechanical effort. Yeah. Fixing the basement. Okay, so in the midst of all of this is, here comes the name, the importance of the name. And it's Durvasa Muni recognizing the qualification of the king has some connection with the name, and surely it does. Same for us. Any discussion? Yes.
Guru Maharaj, on this point of one's intelligence being awakened, it seems like there is an event in the lives of persons that somehow is the trigger or the something that awakens that intelligence. In this
awakens intelligence. Awakens intelligence?
Yes.
Okay.
What is it that awakens that intelligence in some, but doesn't seem to awaken in others? So in this case, Durvasa Muni, it has awakened. In the case of Hiranyakashipu and Ravana, it did not In the case of Rahugana, it did. So it seems like there is something that facilitates the intelligence from being awakened.
Well, it's the question you're asking is similar to how does bhakti awaken? Because if Vaishnava cannot be recognized, the Supreme Lord cannot be recognized without bhakti. So how does bhakti become awakened? So by the association of a bhakta. But then that's not sufficient. In and of itself, this Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra is references made in relation to Prahlad Maharaj within the womb of Kayadu. She also heard Narada, but she forgot. When she was hearing from Narada, she was very pleased, but she forgot. And Prahlad didn't forget. And so she forgot when she went back into the association of Hiranyakashipu, and then she forgot. It wasn't like taken away, it was just covered. She forgot. So how bhakti begins is the association of a bhakta, and it needs to be cumulative effect. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains it slightly differently, similar but slightly differently, that unknowing agyata sukriti, and the sukriti in this case being the rendering of service to a devotee, or the association of a devotee, agyata sukriti, that kind of sukriti, transcendental sukriti, little by little by little by little, the accumulation of unknowing devotional service, sukriti, then one can consciously say yes. That's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's explanation. So it's adding the association of a devotee or contact with devotional service, sustained over a period of time, accumulatively can turn the no into a yes, or the contamination into purification, sufficient purification to say yes, then bhakti enters, and then one can recognize. That doesn't take away the voluntary spirit. That is to say, Rahugana at some point said yes, instead of acting through false ego. He could act properly and recognize. What I'm saying here is that this last part is there's free will or volition at every moment, and to say yes is an act of volition. It's not created by unknowing, it's facilitated by unknowing, and it's made possible when one says yes. And it seems that your question is, you know, to properly answer your question has got to include both. To get to the point where one may say yes, some clearing has to take place, unknowing clearing, unknowing mercy. You know, distribution of prasadam is a nice one. You know, that there are, Shamsundra was sharing this with me in Houston. There was a long-standing instruction that he received from Tamal Krishnamurti to establish a restaurant at that property. Took him a long time to do it, much to everyone's frustration. But now that it's operating, He was showing me the numbers because we were together and they send him the results every day. You know, as the Sunday tally, I forget the number, but it was a very large number of the income just from prasadam distribution. Now these are, he was saying it's 90%+ Western people that never came before. So now they like the prasadam and they're getting purified. They're not going there because they want purification. They're going there because they like the food and whatever else they like. You know, the nice people and the air conditioned and whatever else they like. So that's an example of agyata sukriti. Yet some of those people aren't going to say yes, and some of the people will say yes to chant or read or take up some positive bhakti activity other than taking prasadam, unknowingly getting bhakti. So your question, you know, it requires, one can bring one, like the saying, you can bring a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Someone still has to say yes. And that's a free will choice. That's a free will choice. It's not predicated on anything other than a free will choice. Now, we can enhance that free will choice by interaction with those persons that come to the Houston restaurant, for example, with warmth and feeling and friendship. That's just meeting them on the material level. And then when they have some appreciation of the good quality of the devotee, the heart can open and then they can hear something that they couldn't have heard otherwise unless there was that relationship. But still there's an operative yes, it has to happen. So there are things that we can do that can enhance it for sure. And good conduct on the part of the Vaishnava that's giving the bhakti opportunity to others is essential. Say it happened here. Durvasa Muni's, Maharaj Ambarish's kindness. Was what he considered, what's impossible for one who has shelter of the Supreme Lord. It's a very important part of our responsibility as devotees to have Vaishnava quality and consistent Vaishnava quality even when the duality goes this way or the duality goes that way. That's extraordinary. So that's attractive. And that helps the person say yes. These be willing to hear the message of transcendence in a different way.
Okay. May I say a follow-up thing? So in this pastime, from your, how you said it, I have a new appreciation for this pastime. That in Durvasa Muni's case, it was not necessarily the heat of Sudarshan Chakra. Of course, speaking with the Lord, I'm sure, has some effect. But finally, it is Ambarish Maharaj's prayers to Sudarshan Chakra and the way he is saying, let all my pious credits go to Durvasa Muni, that is the transforming element for him. Is that a fair...
Yeah, exactly. His quality of mercy. Unmotivated mercy, unconditional mercy.
Wow. Thank you.
Yes.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. I wanted to ask you, when you brought up the point that by the power of bhakti, faith on bhakti, you can perform, or you can go over even your limitations.
Yes.
And by that mercy that you receive, you're able, you know, to overcome those limitations and do something extraordinary. Which is, in fact, is that going over, you know, one's condition.
Very practical.
And I was just thinking also that it's a gradual process, and at times, you know, we may lose sight just because sometimes being overwhelmed. I just remember something as you spoke, something that you told us once, that when you were temple president in 55th, that it was such an overwhelming task to manage that temple that you were broken, basically, physical and mentally. And there was some...
It was mainly the finance. It wasn't just managing the temple. It was, there was insufficient income every month by $10,000 in the third week of the month.
Yeah. So one thing that you mentioned,
and it's not somebody else is going to make it fall from the sky. The buck stops here, person, and every month the reality of bills that had to be paid or the thing gets shut down, that was, it was crushing. It wasn't just managing the temple.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and there was this, the guy who, you know,
The
whole thing. So,
but
the thing that you say was the dream that you have of Srila Prabhupada and how that helped you just like go forward.
Yeah.
So, what was that? Or how can we, when going through the process of purification, hit that moment of just realizing our, you know?
It's cultivation. It's not the how-to, it's cultivation. You don't go from 0 to 10. You cultivate. And ordeal, like Durvasa Muni's ordeal, it helps you pay attention. It's cultivation. You know, it's necessity is the mother of invention, they say. So when there's ordeal, then it helps one to cultivate, because otherwise, complacency. So how is by cultivation? And you just